This is Audible.
Listening Library presents And I Darken by Kirsten White. Read for you by Fiona Hardingham. 1. 1435. Sighișoara, Transylvania. Vlad Dracul's heavy brow descended like a storm when the doctor informed him that his wife had given birth to a girl. His other children, one from his first wife, now nearly full grown, and even a bastard child from his mistress born last year, had been boys. He had not thought his seed weak enough to produce a girl. He pushed through the door into the close, heavy air of the tiny bedroom. It stank of blood and fear and filled him with disgust. Their home in the fortified hill city of Sighișoara was a far cry from what he deserved. It sat next to the main gate, in the suffocating press of the square, beside an alley that reeked of human waste. His retainer of 10 men was merely ceremonial, rendering him a glorified placeholder. He might have been the military governor of Transylvania, but he was supposed to be the ruler of all Valahia. Perhaps that was why he had been cursed with a girl. Another insult to his honor. He was in the Order of the Dragon, sanctioned by the Pope himself. He should be the Vivode, the Warlord Prince. But his brother sat on the throne, while he was governor of Saxons squatting on his own country's land. Soon he would show them his honor on the end of a sword. Vasilisa lay on the bed, soaked in sweat and moaning in pain. Certainly the weakness that took root in her womb had been her own. His stomach turned at the sight of her, princess now in neither demeanor nor appearance. The nurse held up a squalling, red-faced little monster. He had no names for a girl. Vasilisa would doubtless want something that honored her family, but Vlad hated the Moldavian royals she came from, for failing to bring him any political advantage. He had already named his bastard Vlad, after himself. He would name his daughter the same. Ladislav, he declared. It was a feminine form of Vlad. Diminutive, diminished. If Vasilisa wanted a strong name, she would have to bear him a son. Let us pray she is beautiful, so we can get some use out of her, he said. The infant screamed louder. Vasilisa's royal breasts were far too important to suckle from. The wet nurse waited until Vlad left, then held the babe to her common teats. She was still full of milk from her own child, a boy. As the baby latched on with surprising fierceness, the nurse offered her own prayer. Let her be strong. Let her be sly. She looked over at the princess, 15, lovely and delicate as the first spring blossoms, wilted and broken on the bed. And let her be ugly. 2. Vlad could not be bothered to be present for the birth of his second child by Vasilisa, a son a year younger than his sister, practically chasing her into this world. The nurse finished cleaning the newborn, then held him out to his mother. He was tiny, perfect, with a mouth like a rosebud and a full head of dark hair. Vasilisa lay, glassy-eyed and mute, on the bed. She stared at the wall. Her gaze never even drifted to her son. A tug on the nurse's skirt brought her attention downward, where tiny Lada stood, scowling. The nurse angled the baby toward his sister. Her brother, she said, her voice soft. The baby started to cry, a weak, garbled sound that worried the nurse. Larda's scowl deepened. She slapped a dimpled hand over his mouth. The nurse pulled him away quickly, and Larda looked up, face contorted in rage.
Mine,
she shouted. It was her first word. The nurse laughed, shocked, and lowered the baby once more. Lada glared at him until he stopped crying. Then, apparently satisfied, she toddled out of the room. 3. If Vasilisa saw her daughter wrestling on the floor with the dogs and the nurse's son, Bogdan, the nurse would lose her position. However, since the birth of Radu 4 years ago, Vasilisa never left her rooms. Radu had gotten all the beauty their father had wished on his daughter. His eyes were framed by thick lashes, his lips full, his gentle curls kissed with a hint of Saxon gold. Bogdan screamed as Lada, Ladislav, now 5, refused to answer to her full name, bit down on his thigh. He punched her, she bit harder, and he cried for help. If she wants to eat your leg, she is allowed, the nurse said. Quit screaming, or I will let her eat your supper too. Like her brother, Lada had big eyes, but hers were close-set, with arched brows that made her look perpetually cross. Her hair was a tangled mass, so dark that her pale skin appeared sickly. Her nose was long and hooked, her lips thin, her teeth small and, judging from Bogdan's angry cries, quite sharp. She was contrary and vicious, and the meanest child the nurse had ever cared for. She was also the nurse's favorite. By all rights, the girl should be silent and proper, fearful and simpering. Her father was a powerless tyrant, cruel in his impotence and absent for months at a time. Her mother was every bit as absent, withdrawn and worthless in their home, incapable of doing anything to help herself. They were an apt representation of the entire region, particularly the nurse's homeland of Valahia. But in Lada, she saw a spark, a passionate, fierce glimmer that refused to hide or be dimmed. Rather than trying to stamp out that fire for the sake of Lada's future, the nurse nurtured it. It made her feel oddly hopeful. If Lada was a spiky green weed that sprouted in the midst of a drought-cracked riverbed, Radu was a delicate, sweet rose that wilted in anything less than the perfect conditions. Right now, he wailed at the nurse's paws in spooning the thin gruel sweetened with honey into his mouth.
Make him shut up!
Lada climbed over her father's largest hound, grizzled and patient with age. How should I do that?
Smother him!
Lada! Bite your tongue! He is your brother.
He is a worm. Bogdan is my brother.
The nurse scowled, wiping Radu's face with her apron. Bogdan is not your brother. I would sooner lie with the dogs than your father, she thought.
He is. You are. Say you are.
Lada jumped onto Bogdan's back. Though he was 2 years older and far bigger, she pinned him to the ground, jamming her elbow into his shoulder.
I am! I am!
He said, half giggling, half crying.
Throw Radu out with the chamber pots!
Radu wailed louder, working himself up to a fit. The nurse clucked her tongue, picking him up even though he was much too large to be carried around. He put a hand in her blouse and pinched her skin, which was loose and wrinkled like an old apple. She sometimes wished he would shut up, too, but when he did speak, it was always so sweet, it made up for his tantrums. He even smelled nice, as if honey clung to his mouth between meals. Be a good boy, the nurse said, and you can go sledding with Lada and Bogdan later. Would you like that? Radu shook his head, lip trembling with the threat of more tears. Or we could visit the horses. He nodded slowly, and the nurse sighed with relief. She looked up to find Lada gone. Where did she go? Bogdan's eyes widened in fear and indecision. Already, he did not know whose wrath to fear more, his mother's or tiny Lada's. Huffing, the nurse tucked Radu onto her hip, his feet bouncing against her legs with every step. She stalked down the hall toward the narrow stairs leading to the bedrooms. Lada, if you wake your mother, there will be... She stopped, holding perfectly still, her fearful expression matching Bogdan's own. From the sitting room near the front of the house, she heard voices. low voices, men's voices, speaking in Turkish, the language of their oftentimes enemy, the Ottomans. Which meant Vlad was home. And Lada was... The nurse ran down the hall and burst into the sitting room to find Lada standing in the middle of the room.
I kill infidels!
The child snarled, brandishing a small kitchen knife.
Do you?
Vlad spoke to her in the language of the Saxons, the tongue most spoken in Sigishwara. The nurse's Saxon was crude, and while Vasilisa was fluent in several languages, she never spoke with the children. Lada and Radu spoke only Valahian. Lada waved the knife at him in answer to the question she did not understand. Vlad raised an eyebrow. He was wrapped in a fine cloak, an elaborate hat on his head. It had been nearly a year since Lada had seen her father. She did not recognize him.
Lada,
the nurse whispered.
Come here at once.
Lada stood as tall as her short, stocky legs allowed.
This is my home. I am the Order of the Dragon. I kill infidels.
One of the three men accompanying Vlad murmured something in Turkish. The nurse felt sweat breaking out on her face, her neck, her back. Would they kill a child for threatening them? Would her father allow it? Or would they simply kill her for being unable to control Lada? Vlad smiled indulgently at his daughter's display, then bowed his head at the three men. They returned the bow and swept out, acknowledging neither the nurse nor her disobedient charge.
How many infidels have you killed?
Vlad's voice, this time in the melodic romance language tones of Valachian, was smooth and cold.
Hundreds!
Lada pointed the knife at Radu, who hid his face against the nurse's shoulder.
I killed that one this morning.
And will you kill me now?
Lada hesitated, lowering her hand. She stared at her father, recognition seeping across her face like milk dropped in clear water. As quick as a snake, Vlad snatched the knife out of her hand, then grabbed her by the ankle and lifted her into the air.
And how, he said, her upside-down face level with his, did you think you could kill someone bigger, stronger, and smarter than you?
You cheated!
Lada's eyes burned with a look the nurse had come to dread. That look meant injury, destruction, or fire. Often, all three.
I won. That is all that matters.
With a scream, Lada twisted herself up and bit her father's hand.
God's wounds!
He dropped her on the floor. She tucked into a ball, rolled out of his reach, then crouched, baring her teeth at him. The nurse cringed, waiting for Vlad to fly into a rage and beat Lada. Or beat her for her failure to keep Lada tame and docile. Instead, he laughed.
My daughter is feral.
So sorry, my lord. The nurse ducked her head, gesturing frantically at Lada. She is overexcited upon seeing you again after so long an absence.
What of their instruction? She does not speak Saxon.
No, my lord. That was not quite true. Lada had picked up Saxon obscenities and frequently yelled them out the window at people in the busy square. She knows a bit of Hungarian, but there has been no one to see to the children's education. He clucked his tongue, a thoughtful look in his shrewd eyes.
And what of this one? Is he as fierce?
Vlad leaned in to where Radu had finally peered outward. Radu immediately burst into tears, burying his face once more in the nurse's shoulder and shoving his hand beneath her cap to wrap it in her hair. Vlad's lip turned up in disgust.
This one takes after his mother, Vasilisa,
he shouted, so loud that Radu was terrified into silence interrupted only by hiccups and sniffles. The nurse did not know whether to stay or leave, but she had not been dismissed. Lada ignored her, wary eyes fixed on her father.
Vasilisa!
Vlad roared again. He reached out to snatch Lada, but this time she was ready. She scrambled away, crawling under the polished table. Vlad wrapped his knuckles on it.
Very good. Vasilisa!
His wife stumbled into the room, hair down, wrapped in nothing but a dressing robe. She was worn thin. Her cheekbones jutted out under grayed, empty eyes. If the birth of Lada had nearly killed her, Radu's had drained whatever life she had left. She took in the scene. Radu, tear-stained, Lada under the table, and her husband, finally home, with a dull gaze.
Yes?
She asked.
Is that how you greet your husband? The Vivode of Valachia? The Prince?
He smiled in triumph, his long moustache lifting to reveal thin lips. Vasilisa stiffened.
They are making you prince. What of Alexandru?
My brother is dead.
The nurse did not think Vlad looked much like a man in mourning. Finally noticing her daughter, Vasilisa beckoned to her.
Vladislav, come out from under there. Your father is home.
Lada did not move.
He is not my father.
Make her come out.
Vasilisa snapped at the nurse.
Can you not command your own child?
Vlad's voice was as clear as a blue sky in the freezing depths of winter. The sun with teeth, they called those days. The nurse shrank further into herself, shifting so that Radu at least was out of Vlad's sight. Vasilisa looked frantically to either side, but there was no escape from the room.
I want to go home, she whispered. Back to Moldavia. Please let me.
Beg.
Vasilisa's tiny frame trembled. Then she dropped to her knees, lowered her head, and took Vlad's hand in her own.
Please, please, I beg of you. Let me go home.
Vlad put out his other hand and stroked Vasilisa's lank, greasy hair. Then he grabbed it, wrenching her head to the side. She cried out, but he pulled tighter, forcing her to stand. He placed his lips against her ear.
You are the weakest creature I have ever known. Crawl back to your hole and hide there. Crawl!
He threw her down, and, sobbing, she crawled from the room. The nurse looked steadily at the finely woven rug that covered the stone floor. She said nothing. She did nothing. She prayed that Radu would remain silent.
You, Vlad pointed at Lada, come out now.
She did, still watching the door Vasilisa had disappeared through.
I am your father, but that woman is not your mother. Your mother is Valachia. Your mother is the very earth we go to now, the land I am prince of. Do you understand?
Lada looked up into her father's eyes, deep-set and etched with years of cunning and cruelty. She nodded, then held out her hand.
The daughter of Valachia wants her knife back.
Vlad smiled and gave it to her. 4. 1446. Turgo Viste. Valachia. Radu tasted blood in his mouth. It mixed with the salt from the tears streaming down his face. Andre and Aron Dinesht kicked him again, their boots sharp against his stomach. Radu rolled onto his side, curling in on himself, trying to become as small as possible. The dried leaves and rocks littering the forest floor scraped his cheeks. No one could hear him out here. He was used to being unheard. No one heard him in the castle, which, after 6 years, still felt like a home only when he was in his room with his nurse. His tutors were engaged in a constant power struggle with Lada, and Radu's exemplary work often went unnoticed. Lada was always either studying or off with Bogdan, and she never had time for him. Their older half-brother, Machia, forced Radu to seek out hiding places to avoid his blunt comments and even blunter fists, and his father, the prince, went entire weeks without acknowledging his existence. The pressure built like steam until Radu did not know whether he was more terrified that his father would never notice him again, or that he would. It was safer to go unnoticed. Unfortunately, today he had failed at that. Arone Dinesht laughed, a sound sharper than his boots.
You squeal like a piglet. Do it again. Please.
Radu covered his head as Arone slapped his cheeks.
Stop! Stop! We are here to get stronger,
Andre said.
And no one is weaker than you.
At least once a month, all the boys ages 7 to 12 from Boyer families, Boyer was a word for nobility, to be said with a twist of the lip and a sneer if Larda was speaking, were left deep in the forest. It was a tradition, one most of the adults laughed at indulgently. A game, they called it. But they all watched with narrowed eyes, seeing who emerged first, looking as though he had been merely out for a stroll rather than tired and scared like a normal boy. The Dineshts, who had traded the throne back and forth with the Bazarab family for the last 15 years, were particularly interested in how Arone and Andre, both a year older than Radu, fared. They were not overfond of the Draculesht usurpers. Radu was the son of the prince, a Draculesht, the smallest boy and the biggest target. He was never the winner. And today, for the first time, he wondered whether he would make it back at all. Terror clawed in his throat. His breath came in short, painful gasps. Andre grabbed Radu, fingers digging into his arms as he dragged him up to stand. His mouth was against Radu's ear, breath hot.
My mother says your father wishes you had never been born. Do you wish that too?
Arone hit him in the stomach, and Radu gagged.
Say it,
Andre commanded, his voice cheerful.
Say you wish you had never been born.
Radu squeezed his eyes shut.
I wish I had never been born.
Arone hit him.
I said it!
Radu screamed, coughing and struggling for breath.
I know,
Andre said.
Hit him again. My father will... Your father will do what? Write the Sultan to ask permission to scold us? Ask my family to donate to the throne so he can afford a switch to whip us with? Your father is nothing. Just like you.
Radu had braced for another blow when Arone's shout made him open his eyes. Arone was spinning in a circle, trying desperately to dislodge Larda. She was not supposed to be here, but somehow her presence was unsurprising. She had jumped on the boy's back, clasping her arms around him and pinning his arms to his sides. Radu could not see her face through her tangled drape of hair until Arone twisted to the side, revealing Larda's teeth sunk into his shoulder. Andre shoved Radu away and rushed forward to help his cousin. Larda released Arone, jumping off his back and crouching down, her eyes narrowed. Andre was 11, the same age as Larda, but bigger than she was. Arone stumbled to a tree and leaned against it, crying and clutching his shoulder. Larda smiled at Andre, her teeth coated in blood.
You demon girl, I...
Larda stood and slammed her hand into Andre's nose. He screamed, dropping to his knees and sniveling. Larda walked after him, then kicked his side so that he fell onto his back. He stared up at her as he choked on the blood streaming from his nose. She put her foot on his throat and pushed, just enough to make his eyes bulge in panic.
Get out of my forest!
She snarled. She lifted her foot and watched, eyes hooded, as Andre and Arone put their arms around each other, all traces of bravado gone. They ran. Radu wiped his face on his sleeve, leaving behind a mess of blood and dirt. He looked at Larda, standing in the middle of a shaft of light that filtered through a gap in the thick branches. For once in his life, he was grateful for her vicious temper, for her strange instinctive knowledge of the best way to hurt someone with the least amount of work. He was so tired and so scared, and she had saved him.
Thank you.
He stumbled toward her with arms outstretched. When he was hurting, his nurse folded him into herself, sealing him away from the world. He wanted, needed, that now.
Lada hit him in the stomach. He doubled over in pain, sinking to his knees. She knelt next to him, grasping him by the ears.
Do not thank me. All I did was teach them to fear me. How does that help you? Next time you hit first, you hit harder. You make certain that your name means fear and pain. I will not be here to save you again.
Radu trembled, trying not to cry. He knew Lada hated it when he cried. But she had hurt him, and she had tasked him with something impossible. The other boys were bigger, meaner, faster. Whatever made Lada better than them had skipped him entirely. He spent the long, miserable walk out of the forest trailing his sister, wondering how he could be like her. The boyars sat waiting under tents, gossiping as servants fanned them. Machia was there, talking with Vlad Dinesht, and his expression when he saw Radu's face indicated that he approved of the damage to it, and, perhaps, he wished to do more. Radu stepped more fully behind Lada. All other eyes were on her anyway. The boyars were astonished to see the prince's daughter walk out of the forest with her head held high. No one was surprised to see Radu filthy and bloodied, although he wasn't as bloodied as Arone and Andre. In their haste to flee Lada, the Dinesht cousins had gotten lost and had to be rescued. After that, the forest lessons were cancelled, and the boyar families whispered among themselves about the prince's daughter. She had always outpaced the boys her age with riding skills and demanded to be taught everything her brother was, but this was far more public. Rather than scolding Lada, their father laughed and boasted of his daughter, as wild and fierce as a boar. If it had been Radu who had come out of the forest victorious, would he have even noticed? Radu heard it all, hiding behind tapestries, waiting in dark corners. He had seen Arone and Andre watching him, but after 2 weeks, they had yet to catch him alone. When adults were present, Radu could smile and charm and remain safe. Lada had been right. She had not saved him. The looks in his enemies' eyes when they saw him made that clear. So he waited, and he hid, and he observed. And then, one crisp autumn evening, he made his move.
Hello, he said, voice cheery and bright enough to light up the twilight. The servant boy startled, jumping as though struck. May I help you?
His shirt was nearly worn through. Radu could see the sharp lines of his collarbones, the brittle length of his skinny arms. They were probably the same age, but Radu's life had been much kinder, at least as far as having enough food. Radu smiled.
Would you like something to eat?
The boy's eyes widened in wonder. He nodded. Radu knew the value in being overlooked, because he himself was so often unseen. He led Emil, a servant so lowly he was invisible to the boyars he worked for, to the kitchen. A rash of thefts plagued the castle. After every feast attended by the boyar families, someone would notice a necklace, a jewel, a personal token of value missing. It reflected poorly on the prince, so Vlad declared that whoever was discovered to be behind the crimes would be publicly lashed and indefinitely imprisoned. The boyars muttered angry, ugly things beneath their breath, and Vlad skulked through the castle, eyes narrowed and shoulders stooped beneath the weight of his shame at being unable to control his own home. Several weeks later, Radu stood on the inner edge of the crowd as Arone and Andre, faces covered in tears and snot, were tied to a post in the middle of the square.
Why would they have stolen those things?
Lada watched, her mouth turned down in curiosity. Radu shrugged.
All the missing items were found under their beds. By a servant.
A servant who was no longer painfully underfed and considered Radu his best and only friend in the world. Radu smiled. There had been no real reason to wait as long as he had, delaying the punishment of his enemies and prolonging his father's embarrassment. The anticipation had been delicious, though, and now, the reward. Larda turned to look at him, suspicion drawing her brows together.
Did you do this? There are other ways to beat someone than with fists.
Radu poked her in the side with a finger. She surprised him by laughing. He stood up straighter, a proud grin at having surprised and delighted Larda bursting across his face. She never laughed, unless she was laughing at him. He had done something right.
Then the lashings began.
Radu's smile wilted and died. He looked away. He was safe now. And Larda was proud of him, which had never happened before. He focused on that to ignore the sick feelings twisting in his stomach as Aron and Andre cried out in pain. He wanted his nurse, wanted her to hold and comfort him, and this, too, made him feel ashamed. Larda watched the whip with a calculating look.
Still, she said, fists are faster.
5. 1446, Court A, De Arjesh, Valahia. During the height of the summer of Larda's 12th year, when plague descended with the insistent buzz of 1,000 blue-black flies, Vlad took Larda and Radu out of the city. Mircea, their torment of an older brother, was in Transylvania, soothing tensions. Larda felt gloriously visible riding by her father's side. Radu and the nurse and Bogdan rode behind them, and her father's contingent of guards farther back still. Her father pointed out various features of the countryside, a hidden trail up the side of a mountain, an ancient graveyard with long-forgotten people marked by smooth stones, the way the farmers carved out ditches to pull water from the river into their crops. She drank, in his words, with more thirst than the greedy soil. Stopping briefly in the small green city of Corte de Arjesh, they paid their respects at a church her father had bestowed his patronage on. Normally, Larda chafed under religious instruction. Though she attended church with her father, it was always a political duty of being seen, being observed, allowing one family or another to be closest to them, as a matter of prestige. The priests sang soporifically. The air was cloying, and the light was dim, oppressively filtered through stained glass. They were Orthodox, but her father had political ties to the Pope through the Order of the Dragon, so it was even more important that she stand up straight, listen to the priest, do everything exactly as it needed to look to others. It was a performance that set Larda's teeth on edge. However, here, in this church, her father's name was carved into the wall. It was covered in gold leaf and positioned next to a massive mosaic of Christ on the cross. It made her feel strong, as though God himself knew her family's name. One day she would build her own church, and God would see her too. They continued traveling along the Arjesh River, which sometimes was narrow and violently churning, sometimes as wide and smooth as glass. It snaked through the land until reaching the mountains. Everything was a green, so deep it was nearly black. Dark grey stones and boulders jutted out of the steeply rising slopes, and beneath them the Arjesh wandered. It was cooler here than in Turgo Viste, a chill that never quite burned away clinging to the rocks and moss. The looming mountains were so steep that the sun shone directly on the traveling company for only a few hours each day before shadows reclaimed the passes. It smelled of pine and wood and rot. But even the rot smelled rich and healthful, unlike the hidden rot of Turgo Viste. Late one afternoon, near the end of their journey, Their father reached up to an evergreen tree that was growing sideways off a boulder. He broke off a sprig, smelled it, then passed it to Larda with a smile. It was a smile that made her feel as full and dizzy as the mountain air did. A peaceful smile. She had never seen such a smile on her father's face, and being the recipient of it made her heart beat with a frenzied happiness.
"We are that tree," he said,
then rode ahead. Larda pulled on the reins to make her horse, a docile and dull brown creature, pause. She studied the tree squeezing life out of stone. It was twisted and small, but green, growing sideways in defiance of gravity. It lived where nothing had any business thriving. Larda did not know whether her father meant the two of them or whether he meant all of Valahia. In her mind, the two had become indistinguishable.
"We are that tree,"
she thought, holding the richly scented sprig to her nose.
"We defy death to grow."
That evening they came to a village snuggled between the river and the mountains. The homes were simple, spare, nothing compared with their castle. But children ran and played in the lanes, and bright bursts of flowers were nurtured in tiny plots. Chickens and sheep roamed freely.
"What about thieves?"
Radu asked. In Turgo Viste, their animals were kept carefully penned, with someone assigned to watch them at all hours. The nurse made a sweeping motion with her arm to encompass the whole village.
"Everyone knows everyone. Who would steal from their neighbor?"
"Yes, because they would be immediately found out and punished," Larda said.
Radu gave her a frowning sort of smile.
"Because they care about each other."
They were served food, warm, round loaves of rough bread, chicken blackened on the outside and scalding hot on the inside. Perhaps it was the travel, or the smell of green things all around, but even the food here tasted richer and more real to Larda. The next morning Larda woke early, the straw under her cot poking through her shift and into her back. With the nurse snoring and Bogdan and Radu curled up in the corner like puppies, Larda slipped out the window. The cottage, cozy and neat, the nicest in the village, was built against the tree line, and it took only a handful of steps before Larda was enveloped in a new, secret world filled with green-filtered light and the constant droning of unseen insects. The ground beneath her bare feet was morning damp and littered with striped slugs the size of her index finger. Mist clung to sections of the trees, greeting her with almost sentient tendrils. She climbed straight up, picking out a precarious path, winding her way with slow progress toward the top of the nearest jutting peak of solid gray stone. There were ruins up there, an ancient fortress long since fallen. It teased her with glimpses through the fog, calling to her in a way she could not explain. She had to get to it. She climbed down a small ravine, and then straight up the face of the rocky peak. Her feet slipped, and she pressed her face against the stone, breathing hard. Hammered into the stone were the rusted remains of pegs that once must have held a bridge. Larda grabbed one, then another, until she heaved herself up and over the crumbling remains of a wall. She crossed the foundation, jagged bits of brick and mortar digging into her feet. At the very edge, where even the wall had fallen away, nothing was left but a cobblestone platform hanging over empty space. Her heart pounded as she looked down at the Arjesh, now a tiny stream, and the village mere pebbles for homes. The sun crested the opposite peaks, falling directly on her. It turned the motes in the air to gold and the mist into brilliant rainbow droplets. A spiky purple flower growing in the old foundation caught her eye. She plucked it, holding it to the light, then pressed it to her cheek. A sort of rapture descended on her, a knowledge that this moment, this mountain, this sun, were designed for her. The closest she had come before to the exultant feeling, both a burning and a lightness in her chest, was when her father had been pleased with her. But this was new, bigger, overwhelming. It was Valahia. Her land, her mother, greeting her. This was how Church was supposed to feel. She had never experienced the divine spirit within a church's walls. But on this peak, in this countryside, she felt peace and purpose and belonging. This was the glory of God. This was Valahia. This was hers. After the sun had nearly crossed the canyon and was preparing to disappear behind the mountain, Lada made her way back down. It was harder than the climb up, her feet less sure, her purpose less driving. When she walked back into the village, footsore and starving, it was to a severe scolding from her frantic nurse. Radu pouted that their whole day had been ruined, and even Bogdan scowled because she had not taken him with her. She did not care about any of them. She wanted to tell her father how she had felt up on the mountain, how her mother, Valahia, had embraced her and filled her with light and warmth. She was filled to bursting with it, and she knew her father would understand, knew he would be proud. But he had not even noticed her absence. And at dinner, he was cross, complaining of a headache. Lada tucked the flower she had held on to all day beneath the table. Later that night, she pressed it into the small book of saints her nurse had packed for her, next to the sprig from the evergreen tree. The next day, her father left to attend to business elsewhere. Still, that summer was the best of Lada's life. With her father gone, so too was her driving desperation to please him. She splashed in the river with Bogdan and Radu, climbed rocks and trees, tormented the village children and was tormented back. She and Bogdan created a secret language, a bastard version of their native tongue, with Latin, Hungarian and Saxon mixed in. When Radu asked to play with them, they answered him in their garbled, intricate language. Oftentimes he cried in frustration, which only served to prove they were right to leave such a whining baby out of their games. One day, high on the side of the mountain, Bogdan declared his intention to marry Lada. "Why would we marry?" Lada asked. "Because no other girls are fun. I hate girls. Except for you." Already Lada understood, in a vague and fearful way, that her own future revolved around marriage. With her mother having long since returned to Moldavia, or fled there, depending on which gossip Lada was unable to avoid overhearing, there was no one she could ask about such things. Even the nurse simply clucked her tongue and told her, "Sufficient unto the day was the evil thereof," from which Lada could only understand that marriage was evil. Sometimes she imagined a shadowy figure standing at a stone altar. She would hold up her hand, and he would take everything she had for himself. She burned with hatred at the very idea of that man, waiting, waiting to make her cruel. But this was Bogdan. She supposed if she had to marry anyone, it would be him. "Fine, but only if we agree that I am always in charge." Bogdan laughed. "How is that any different from now?" After delivering a sharp punch to Bogdan's shoulder, Lada was seized with a sudden and urgent need to eliminate the nightmare of the shadowy man. Here on this mountain, everything was perfect. "We should marry right now." "How? Give me your hand." He obeyed, hissing with pain as she drew her knife across his palm. She did the same to her own hand, then grasped his in hers, the warm wetness mingling between their small, dirty hands. "On this mountain, with my mother, Valahia, as witness, I marry Bogdan forever, and no other." He grinned, his big ears glowing red, backlit by the setting sun. "On this mountain, with Lada's mother, who is made of rocks and trees watching, I marry Lada forever, and no other." She squeezed his hand harder. "And I am in charge?" "And you are in charge." They released each other, and with a puzzled and disappointed frown, Bogdan sat on the ground.
What now? How should I know? I've never married anyone before. We should kiss.
Shrugging with indifference, Larda put her lips against Bogdan's. His were soft and dry, warm against her own, and this close his features blurred, making it look as though he had three eyes. She laughed, and he did too. They spent the rest of the afternoon with their noses smashed together, telling each other how monstrous they looked with one eye, or three, or whatever other tricks their vision played. They never spoke of their marriage again, but it took weeks for their palms to heal. When, after an infinite passage of golden and green days, they finally returned to Turgo Viste, it felt like the opposite of a homecoming. Larda ached for what they had left behind. Someday she would go back to the Argesh and rebuild the fortress on that mountain, to live there with her father and Bogdan, maybe even Radu. It would be better than Turgo Viste. Anything would be better than Turgo Viste. 6. 1447. Turgo Viste. Valachia. Radu, 11 years old and still small for his age, kicked at the hard-crusted snow. He was cold and bored and angry. Larda and Bogdan screamed joyfully as they flew past him, the old metal shield barely holding the two of them. They tumbled off at the bottom of the hill, careering to a stop on the banks of the river. It had taken them ages to hike out here, with the heavy, stolen shield dragged behind them. Even though Radu had helped bring it, they would not give him a turn. As Larda and Bogdan carried the shield back up the hill for another round, they jabbered in their secret language, the one they still thought Radu could not understand.
"Look at him," Bogdan laughed, his doltish ears violently red in the cold. "I think he will cry."
"He always cries," Larda answered, not even bothering to look at Radu.
This, of course, made Radu's eyes sting with tears. He hated Bogdan. If that stupid oaf were not here, it would be Radu going down the hill with Larda, Radu who shared her secrets. He stomped off through the snow, the reflected sun dazzlingly bright. If they caught him with tears in his eyes, he would claim it was the light. They would know the truth, though. On the banks of the river, the water was frozen for as far as he could see. Several children played nearby, some around his age. He edged closer to them, trying to appear as though he were merely going in that direction anyway. He wanted them to ask him to join. He wanted it so badly, it hurt more than his frozen fingers.
"I have a honey cake for whoever dares to go to the middle of the river,"
the oldest boy declared. His shoeless feet were wrapped in cloth, but he held himself as straight as any boy or child.
"Liar,"
answered a little girl, with long braids trailing from the shawl clutched around her head.
"You never have any food, Coastin."
The boy lifted his chin, pride and anger visible in the set of his mouth.
"I can go farther out than any of you. I dare you. Who is brave enough?"
"I am,"
Radu said. He immediately regretted it. Cautious by nature, ever fearful of being hurt, Radu shied away from risk. It was part of what Bogdan and Larda mocked him most for. Going out onto a frozen river was not something he would ever choose to do. He nearly backed away when he heard Bogdan's loud whoop of joy behind him. He stepped forward instead. The group looked over, only now noticing him. Kostin's eyes narrowed as he took in Radu's fine clothes, lingering on his leather boots. Radu wanted to be his friend. More than that, in a way Radu did not even understand, he wanted to be Coastin. He wanted to look others full in the face, unafraid, unashamed, even with nothing to his name. Coastin's upper lip pulled back, and Radu was seized with a sudden fear, worse than that of facing the frozen river. He was afraid Coastin would ignore him, or tell him to leave. He was afraid these children would look at him and know he was not worth their time.
If you go farther than I do, you can have my boots, Radu said, his words tumbling out in desperation. Kostin's eyebrows rose, and his expression grew sly. Do you swear? On all the saints? The children looked equal parts aghast and impressed with Radu's brash and inappropriate declaration. It was a very big swear, as there were more saints than Radu could ever remember. And he knew he was not supposed to invoke them for something like this. Radu stood straighter, mimicking Kostin's aggressive stance. And what if you go farther than me? Kostin's tone indicated he thought it impossible. Radu smiled, going along with Kostin's obvious lie. The honey cake. Kostin nodded, and they stepped from the bank to the river. This close to shore, the ice was an opaque white and littered with small pebbles. Radu shifted his feet hesitantly, trying to get a feel for how his boots might slip. Laughing, Kostin glided forward, sliding his cloth-wrapped feet along as though he had done this 100 times before. He probably had. Studying Kostin, Radu continued to slide forward. He began making better progress, though he still lagged far behind. That was fine. Radu did not actually want to beat the boy, since he was certain Kostin had no honey cake to offer. When people could not meet expectations, they got either ashamed or angry, Radu had found. He suspected Kostin would be the type to get angry, and he wanted to be his friend, not his enemy. He had another pair of boots at home anyway. Nurse would scold him, but she would not tell his father, and she was always kind and gentle to him after a good scolding. They had gotten several body lengths from the riverbank when a loud crack echoed around them. Radu froze. Kostin looked back, dark eyes flashing, chin lifted. The middle is this way, coward. He took another few steps and, with a shattering sound, fell through the ice. Kostin! Radu shouted, edging toward the break. The boy bobbed back up, scrambling for a grip on the ice. Radu dropped to his belly and scooted forward. He could nearly reach Kostin's hands, but he heard the ice beneath him weakening. Someone grabbed his ankle, yanking him back. Wait! He screamed, holding out his hands to Kostin, who had leveraged himself onto his belly, but could not get the rest of his body out of the water. He reached for Radu, but it was too late. Kostin's eyes widened in terror, his face as white as the ice, as Radu was pulled away. Wait, wait, we have to help him! Radu tried to scramble to his feet, but another hand took hold of his other ankle and slammed him down. His chin bounced against the ice, teeth biting into his tongue and drawing blood. Then he was thrown onto the bank of the river, with Larda slapping his face. What were you thinking? She screamed. We have to help him! No! He will drown! Let me go! She picked him up by his collar, shaking him. You could have died! He will die! He is nothing! Your life is worth 100 of his! You understand? Never, ever risk it again for someone else! She was still shaking him, jarring his head so he could not see the river, could not see whether or not Kostin had made it. He could hear the other children shouting, but they sounded far away and indistinct over the pounding of his pulse. Radu finally looked at Larda, expecting to see fury, but instead she looked unfamiliar. Her eyes were brimming with tears she would have mocked him for. Never do that again. She stood and pulled him up beside her. Bogdan took his other arm, and they dragged him away. Radu tried to look back, but Larda grabbed his neck and forced him to keep his gaze forward. He expected her to walk ahead of him on the long, cold trek home, or to yell at him. Instead, she stayed at his side, silent. He was fine, she finally said, after several minutes of listening to Radu sniffle. He climbed out. He did? Radu shivered with hope, trembling all over. Larda pointed to the shield. Sit. She made Bogdan pull Radu on it. She called Bogdan so many terms for an ass that Radu forgot Kostin's face and fell over, laughing. That night,
She sat close to him while they ate supper in front of the fire, picking at him, fussing over him in her way. When she thought he was sleeping, she crept into his room. Radu did not sleep much, always awake and worrying over something. But he lay as still as possible, keeping his breathing even, curious as to what she would do. She sat beside his bed for a long while. Finally, she put a hand on his shoulder and whispered, "You are mine." Radu had been thinking about the way Lada sounded when she told him that Kostin had escaped the river. The tone of her voice, the lack of an edge. He was almost certain she had lied. He fell asleep, wrapped in the secure warmth of her next to him, and nagged by guilt over how happy the day had made him. Still made him. 7. The spring after she had nearly lost Radu to the icy river, Lada lay on her back, staring at the leafy branches overhead, boughs laced together so tightly everything was filtered through vibrant green. Their tutor droned on, Latin today, and Radu dutifully repeated everything. He was almost 12 years old, and she nearing 13. Something about the passage of time and the addition of years to her name filled her with dread. She was not enough. Not yet. All this time, and still she had so far to go. But after 7 years of study, 7 years in this city, in the castle, she could read, write, and speak Latin as well as anyone. It was the language of contracts and letters and God, formal and stiff in her mouth. Valahian was considered a low language. It was a spoken language, rarely written. But oh, how lovely it tasted on the tongue. Ladislav, the tutor prompted. He was a young man, clean-shaven because he did not own land and thus was not allowed to grow facial hair. Lada found him insufferable. But her father insisted she be educated alongside Radu. In fact, her father's exact words had been, "It is a waste to educate the mewling worm, but at least we can include Lada, who has a brain worth shaping. Pity she's a girl." Smarter, stronger, bigger. She had never forgotten the reasons her father listed that she could not have hoped to beat him all those years ago. Her goal since then had been to earn his love, to show him that she could be all those things. It was a challenge she chased relentlessly. Because on the other side of that challenge, when she had achieved smarter, stronger, bigger, she was certain her father would look at her with more pride and love than he ever directed at her older brother, Machia. He was 20 now, a grown man, and her father's heir. Machia campaigned when battles called for it, soothed tension between Boyar families, ate with her father, planned with her father, rode with her father. He was the right hand of Valahia. It was his hand that was always pulling hair, pinching skin, finding little ways to hurt someone that no one else could see. And someday he would be prince, if he lived that long. But before then, before it was too late, Lada would take Machia's place in their father's heart. That day he had returned the knife to her and pronounced her the daughter of Valahia had been the first time he had ever truly looked at her, and the memory of that was both a pleasure and an agony she had been nurturing ever since. She repeated the last sentence her tutor had said in Latin, then said it in Hungarian and Turkish for good measure. "Very good," the tutor shifted uncomfortably on the wooden stool he carried with him. "Though we would all be better served learning indoors." Her last tutor had slapped her for demanding to go outside. She broke his nose. This tutor never did more than make gentle suggestions, which were summarily ignored. "This is my country," Lada stood, stretching her arms over her head, stiff sleeves straining against her movements. She did not like staying in the castle to study. Every day she made them ride out from the walled inner city, past the smaller homes, and then the hovels, and then the filthy, seedy outskirts of life clinging to the capital, into the fresh, green countryside. The horses were left in fields brilliant with purple flowers, while she and Radu studied in the shade of dense, pale bark.